Good morning and welcome to the June 18th, 2020 Reopen Westport Advisory Team. I'm Jennifer Tooker, second selectwoman and chair of this team. If you all would take a moment to do the Pledge of Allegiance with me. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. All right. Morning, everybody, and welcome to our weekly, now it's really, we've kind of settled on Thursday at 11, our weekly meeting. We have four agenda items this morning, and so maybe we'll ask Mark Cooper to kick it off, but in just before I do that, let me remind the public who's watching. We do our business in public, but don't accept public comment during our meetings. But our reopen team at westportct.gov email is always available for comments and questions, and we are we regularly return emails at that site, so please do contact us there. All right. Our Director of Health, Mark Cooper, would you kick us off and sort of update us and give us our weekly update on various health metrics and what it's looking like from a standpoint of new cases and hospitals? And testing and contact tracing, please.
Sure. Good morning, everyone. From last week, June 11th to today, in terms of statewide, a week ago they had 246 hospitalizations, and they're now down to 186. So again, the number of people being hospitalized keeps going down. That was a decrease of about 59. In terms of positive cases in Westport, we have maintained, deaths are maintained at 23. There have been no new deaths in that two-week time period. In terms of cases, we had 280 confirmed cases a week ago. That number went up to 283, but when our nursing staff look at it, the state's constantly updating and revising some of those numbers. Two of those cases were actually like 2 or 3 weeks old. They had just, the state found them wherever, put them in there. So they're not new or active cases. And actually they're past the 14-day time frame for us to do contact tracing. So in 1 week's time, we basically had one new case that we are contact tracing and keeping tabs on. So, and that's pretty steady. Last week, it was also one case we are contact tracing. So one new case that we're following up and making sure they're not spreading. So all in all, it looks like both the state and the town is well within the metrics, if you will, for continued opening. In our DPH call yesterday, they talked about the increases Connecticut does see is mainly coming out of the cities, Bridgeport, Hartford, New Havens, those places, and they're now starting to concentrate their efforts at reducing the spread in the cities. The countryside, if you will, is doing much better. So all things look pretty good. Of course, we'll continue to watch it. It will be interesting again as things open up. If we have new cases and we are on top of our contact tracing, clearly with one case a week, it's no problem for us to do that and keep on top of it.
Thank you, Mark. Certainly, I think we've all been reading in the press that Connecticut is the numbers look good, for lack of a better word, as we, of course, yesterday was day one of phase two opening or reopening. So, you know, we want to keep a watchful eye to make sure that we're all looking at the same numbers and the same trends, and feeling confident about our reopening strategy, certainly locally, which is the one we can talk to. Does anybody here have any questions for Mark based on weekly update? Okay. And again, I know Mark didn't mention it, but I will because I am happy to do the repetitive, be repetitive every week on this. But we do have plenty of testing availability at St. Vincent's on Long Lots Lane. It is an underutilized testing site. So for any of our residents who are who would like to get tested, please do make use of that facility. It's another important indicator and an important part of reopening safely, to make sure there's enough testing for anybody who wants it. Brian?
Yeah, I was just going to say the key, particularly in terms of the office, is the opening of schools. I just wondered, Mark, if there's any deeper analysis of those people who were hospitalized in Westport or those people who died. I mean, is there any breakdown or profile of the analysis that could be helpful in terms of our parents understanding the risks associated with the children? I mean, at some point, John and his group are going to have a public relations exercise as much as anything else in terms of giving confidence to our folks out there who have children in vulnerable positions. And if there's any way to sort of try and give us all, including those people watching, a breakdown of actually what is happening, where are the deaths, where are the hospitalizations, how do they impact various age groups? I'm not asking for it now, Mark, but I mean, at some point, if there's some way to break it down, because I think the experience of communication in this thing has been as factual as you possibly can, and be straight up as you possibly can. Yeah. And so if there's anything like that, Mark, I think the town would appreciate it.
Well, we're looking at that and starting to put that together. We do know that the majority of deaths were from the assisted care, life care centers. We also know, looking at the data, that about 23-25% of the transmission that has gone on in our cases has been between family members, meaning it's going on in the home, people that know each other.
Right.
We're starting to dig down into that as time allows to do that analysis that you're asking for. We've started to do it, but we are also gathering additional information. Some of the information that you need to do that analysis is a little difficult. People aren't always...
Yeah. But you understand my point, Mark. We want folks to discuss real things rather than imaginary risks from Florida or somewhere else. I mean, you know, just what is really happening in our territory. I think that'd be, as we move into the school part, I think that's very, very important.
Our community health section is working on that. That analysis does take some time, and it does also require some data digging. So we are gathering what we need to do what you're suggesting.
It might also be because the virus doesn't stop at the border between Norwalk and Westport. It's, you know, maybe Fairfield County. You think about what is the best sample area to talk to people in terms of those things, if you could do that too. I mean, Westport might not be a good... I don't know what the data is, but I mean, I think about what the best way to communicate what is really happening in our area would be great. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Brian and Mark. Does anybody else have any other questions from Mark before we move on? The next agenda item. Okay. Great. All right. So agenda item number two is supposed to be a guest. Bill Harmer, the executive director of the Westport Library, was due to join us and give us an update, a detailed update on the library reopening plans, but something popped up at the last minute where he is unable to make it today. And so we will see him next week at 11 o'clock next Thursday. He will join us for that meeting with his update. So then actually, because I thought he was going to be here, I did want both Matthew and Bill, but in this case absolutely Matthew, to just sort of give an update on or share with this group the idea that you came to the Board of Selectmen with on Tuesday of this week. Is that Tuesday? Was Thursday? the drive-in concert. And I see Matthew looks frozen. But anyway, let's hope he unfreezes. And oh, yeah, great. And updates us on
back.
That.
Am I still frozen? Am I back? Hang on. Internet, like I said today, the internet is not working well today here. All right, am I online? Look, I see all you guys moving, so I must be back. Okay, so what we came forward with is... an innovative modification to a drive-in movie instead of to drive-in concert. and people would come in their cars just like they would for a drive-in movie, but instead staying in their car, inside the cars, they would get out and sit in front of their cars. And we're going to be using the Imperial lot. And mathematically, by using every other row and every other column, it came out to 69 cars could fit in a socially distant manner in the parking lot. And I could have gotten approval if I, a couple of weeks back, for everybody staying in their cars, but I said that really wasn't a good way to watch a concert. So the state waited, and the guidance that came out on Wednesday, just after the Board of Selectmen approved the concept, was to allow for this event. So we're going live with the event. It's July 3rd. The band is the Tom Petty Project, and it should be good. We're doing it at 6 o'clock, so it's daylight, so we can see people very clearly, so we know that they're being socially distant. And we also are going to have a special COVID table, which is part of the outdoor event regulations. So that if someone feels ill and they believe that it's COVID, they'll go to that station. And we're going to have a police officer doing traffic and also security. And they'd be the first person that the COVID individual, or the person at the station, would contact so that EMS could come and take care of them if there was an issue. That's probably a very small possibility. But nonetheless, we will follow the rules of the state, and I think it's prudent to do so. So that's the concept, July 3rd. There'll only be 69 tickets sold per car, five people per car, and that keeps it under the state limit. And, you know, the social distancing, of course, meets the state's requirements. It's further than any restaurant. So if you've got five people sitting at a table in a restaurant, they're 6 feet. We're going to be 9 feet and 18 feet away from anybody. And so that's the goal. And this brings something new to the community. It brings back a little bit of normalcy, live music, and we hope that it works. And if it works, we'll look to see if we can do maybe another one in August or September. But it's not a thing that we're going to be doing weekly, unlike the movie theater, which will probably be done weekly or once it gets rolling and it works. That's the update on that.
Great, thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Matthew on that? Because that was something we talked about at a public meeting, like I said, at our public board select meeting on Tuesday. But definitely a new idea since the last time we met last week. Mark?
Question for Matt. Are you anticipating food trucks? We got clarification from State Health yesterday that those mobile food trucks can be allowed at events. Again, so long as they are licensed, all that kind of stuff, and maintain social distance. So I don't know if you're thinking of food there at the event.
No. This is still considered a supper and soul event, where our goal is to have the people buy the food from the local restaurants and then bring it in. It'll be carry in, carry out. Also, food trucks would have people milling around more.
Yeah.
And I really want to stress that this will be a socially distant concert. Maybe the next one, if we move in the future as we expand. But here, it's you come, you get out of your car, and you stay in your spot. And you've got a nice little spot to hang out in. If you need to go to the restroom, walk over to the restroom, put on your mask, and talk to the state about where they were supposed to go and have. If I had enough space, they said yes. But walk over to the bathroom, use the bathroom. The bathroom will be cleaned periodically. We'll hire a person just to be doing that, and then they'll come back with their mask. And in my email to ticket buyers, once they buy, it's anticipating this. It'll be, if you see a friend, you wave to your friend. Don't go over to talk to them. Just stay in your area, and we'll make it work.
Great. Any other questions for Matthew? Mary. Oops.
Apologies for that, but we're dealing with the challenges of the cost of recyclables in interlocal meeting. Matthew, I, on behalf of my office manager, I would ask that you and Bill put in a formal date request or whatever. We haven't heard. I think we're doing July 3rd now. Is that correct?
So yes, we're going to do July 3rd and 5th as the rain date. If you want me to resubmit the application so you have it, yes. Eileen Flug asked me for a new hold harmless with the new dates, and I said I would get that to her next week.
Yeah, just or if nothing else, just an email to Eileen, at least around the date itself, so she has that.
Sure.
Thank you.
No problem. Mary had a question, I think.
Good morning, Matt. Mary Young.
Did I hear you describe how people listening could get tickets from you? I think this is going to be a very wonderful, popular event.
How to buy tickets? We will be using the Eventbrite system, but essentially go to the Chamber's website. There'll be a big logo off the front. Click on that, take you to the information on the site. It'll say where to buy, you know, click here to buy tickets, and it'll take you to buy it. And tickets are going to go on sale at 10 a.m. on Monday morning. Again, there are only 69 of them, so we'll see how fast they go. It'd be nice to see a sellout very quickly so we can say, hey, it sold out in 3 minutes. You know, if it takes a few days, that's fine too. And there'll also be, we're building in a donation to a local nonprofit. We're discussing it with the band, who they'd like to see it go to, since they're the ones who are performing. We want to have their input in who it would be. We haven't made a decision yet, but there will be some form of donation as well. We feel that there's a lot of nonprofits are suffering during this time, and if we can help them out through this, then it's a good way to do it.
Great. And just, you know, for the public, just another example of really trying to activate open space that we have in town to offer socially distanced, safe, but yet community building experiences and events. And so I want to say thanks to Matthew and the Chamber of Commerce, and I believe the library is also part of this, and Bill Harmer to offer yet another great community building event. So with that.
Wait, Jen, let me just one more pitch, just to stay with that. 1 week later, the library and us will be doing another stay at home in Seoul. So just, we're going to stay with the different things, giving people different options, those that are comfortable with going out and still offering things for those who aren't comfortable going out. And there are still a number in our community who are wary, and that's understandable. So giving options for people, just sort of dining. I take it we're going to go to dining at some point later in the agenda. So I'll discuss that later.
Well, actually, that is the next agenda item, is to sort of, you know, as we mentioned at the very beginning of the meeting, yesterday was day one of phase two reopening as directed by the state. So we have a number of business sectors that were allowed to reopen yesterday, anything from indoor dining to indoor restaurant dining to all personal services, nail salons, fitness facilities and gyms, museums, aquariums, hotels. So quite a number of business sectors were allowed to open. As always, it is the decision of the business owner as to whether or not and when and how, as long as they apply the rules, how they reopen. So, you know, I don't know how many were actually swung open their doors yesterday. But I would anticipate that we will see many of our local business owners opening in the coming weeks that are involved in those business sectors. I know people on this team have been actively serving as liaisons to a couple of these different business sectors. Obviously, we don't have any large amusement park sports, so that's not a sector we focused on. But we certainly do have plenty of nail salons and personal services salons. So Mark, you can kick us off with what you're hearing from that business sector and how they're reopening and any concern.
Okay. In terms of licensed hair salons and barbershops, we have 55 in town. 23 have applied and been approved for opening. Again, we've been issue with one of them, but it seems like the majority are doing just fine. In terms of nail salons and other salons that are not hair related, those can open up as well, and those can open up, but again, they can't do anything that requires removal of the face covering. And some of the salons in town, again, we have 45. Some of them said that they're not going to reopen because they don't think they can make a go of it yet because they do those sort of things. As of this morning, it looks like we've done about 23 Cosmo compliance checks since yesterday. We opened them up a little bit differently than we did with the restaurants. We did not require site plans, any of those sort of things. It's all interior. So they needed to get their self-certification certificate so that when we get staff out there, and we're making a very concerted effort to get out there as soon as we can to all of them. We're getting out there and making sure they've got their certificate and making sure they're following the right procedures. And again, roughly half of them are doing fine as of this moment. I guess that's it. Yeah.
Does anybody have any questions for Mark? So just so I kind of understand the numbers, putting the hair salon / barbershops aside for a minute, so this kind of non-hair salon bucket, you mentioned there are about 45 of them in town, and right. About, it sounds like you said about half of them, you guys, again, the opening process was different.
Yep.
Than it was for barbershops and hair salons and restaurants. So this was self-certification and then a spot check by us. And you said you spot checked about half of them. Yes, in the last day or two. Is it? Did I hear that correctly?
Yes, I've got a report that we did 23 so far. 23, and that's not a complete. That more could be open. We just haven't gotten there yet.
Exactly. So that's absolutely where I was going. So at least half of our non-hair salon businesses are open, and potentially more than that from a percentage standpoint. Okay.
Right.
Great. That's great to know. And by and large, self-certification was fine, and things, and people are excited to be open and be welcoming customers back. And
we're finding some minor issues, of course. They may not necessarily have the exact right disinfectant, if you will. They have a disinfectant, but one may be not listed by the EPA as one that's most effective. So they're being counseled to say, you know, by tomorrow, get the right stuff in here, and we'll be back to make sure you have the right stuff. And everybody's pretty much wanting to comply. They just didn't realize that the one they particularly had may not have been in the list. So minor little issues, nothing that we feel needs to be, you know, our effort would be to enforcement after the closed places down. And we certainly don't want to do that. We want to use, again, the first opportunity is an education one. This is what the guidelines suggest or require you to be doing. How quick can you do it? Most are saying we'll get it done this afternoon or tomorrow sort of thing. So it's working out quite well.
That's great news, Mark. I know that many, many businesses in that sector were anxious to reopen their doors. So it's good news that it's going relatively smoothly. All right. Any other questions for Mark before I move on to, I'm going to ask Jen to update us on the gyms and fitness facilities. Okay. All right. Jen, do you want to tell us what's going on there real quickly? We can't hear you. I know you show that you're unmuted. Maybe try. Oh, why don't I move to ask, Matthew to talk to us about indoor, and Matthew and Mary as well, on indoor-outdoor dining and where we are with our restaurants and the various approvals for outdoor dining and people actually opening up to do indoor dining. That'd be great.
All right. Well, Mary's got all the numbers for outdoor dining and the magnificent job that she and Nate have done, arduous mission that is still ongoing, and we appreciate it. And the restaurants are completely thrilled to be opening up outdoors. And that sort of leads us to the indoor issue, which is that most of them are so happy with the outdoors, they're not quite focusing on the indoor as yet. I did some yesterday up to them. What are you doing? Are you doing indoor? Because, you know, no one's emailing us saying we're going to do it. So we're not doing an application process. So we really don't know. So I visited about 8 or 9, and some people were actually inside eating already. Most were not. And me personally, I prefer to eat outside regardless. And so when it was such a beautiful day, I don't think we had any idea of what the real demand will be for indoor. We had a Zoom meeting this morning with some of the restaurants. and they're going to take it by ear. Some said they're not going to do indoor for a while. They're doing very well. Some restaurants are saying they're turning people away outdoors, that they have so many people that are interested, and they're sending them off, which hopefully means that these people still want to eat, and they'll go find another restaurant that does have space. The major issue we're having with the indoor is those that have long bars or smaller bars, having patrons sitting at them, and the dealing with the plexiglass. And actually, we're not supposed to use the word plexiglass. Plexiglass is a flammable substance, so we have to say polycarbonate, which is the same thing, a see-through Lexan type of concept that needs to be hung down or up off the bar to separate the bartender and working people behind the bar from patrons. So that's really a big issue. And some of them are wondering, is it worth the investment if outdoor is doing so well? So we're going to see how this goes over the next few weeks, because as things open up more, maybe the need for the plexiglass won't be there. Maybe they'll be able to be closer together. And some of them are thinking, do I need to spend so much money to retrofit things inside? Others who just have space are just going to set up tables and away we go. I did see some minor things that I tried to advise on yesterday where, you know, I pulled up at a restaurant and they had a nice, beautiful setting, but the tables were set. And I said, you know, they're not supposed to be set because, you know, the idea that there may be virus on any of that stuff. Oh, we didn't know, but it looks so nice. I said, yes, it does. It looks beautiful, but it's better if you do it this way. And they said, okay, and they pulled the stuff off. I mean, as you said, Jen, we're not here for enforcement. We're here to liaison and to advise, but I thought that would be good, better than having, you know, the fire marshal show up and say, hey, you know, I figure I'd, you know, help them out right there. But they're doing well. And takeout is doing fine. And that's where I was talking about options. So there are people who don't want to go out. There are people who are, you know, trepidate, who are sort of sticking their toes in the water and like to go outside. And there's those who want to be inside. So now with restaurants, there are three options. You can still order takeout, and you should, because they still need the money. You can go and eat out, and now with inside, you can choose to do that. So with that options, throughout our community, we can find a way for everybody to you know, participate and be involved. Mary, you want to give the exact numbers at this point? Because you got them better than me now.
Thank you, Matt. Mary Young, for the record. So as Matt described, we continue to process applications for outdoor activities for restaurants. Since May 20th, the beginning of phase one, a total of 56 applications have been received. Three were withdrawn, 40 were approved, representing 75%, and we have 13 in the hopper awaiting approval, and that will require some additional information from the applicants and or inspections from our town officials. We were able to, thanks to the experience we've received, be able to turn around some applications in a matter of hours, which is excellent for the restaurants who sometimes tell us, we didn't know we needed this approval. How quickly can we get it? We're already open or want to be open again. And so I'm grateful to my fellow town officials who are helping me expedite those types of applications so that people who may have been technically in violation are quickly brought into compliance so that we don't have to use references like zoning violations in that terminology. I will echo what Matt described with respect to phase two and those restaurants who went through the phase one approval process. Again, maybe it was the good weather, but there didn't seem to be as much desire to offer the indoor dining because of the logistics associated with the social distancing. Some restaurants literally have very little space inside, and so that becomes challenging. And is it really worth it? Why not just do more outdoor dining? Border Grill, I cited to Matt as an example of someone who's got more opportunities outside than he does inside. I again hear from the restaurants that they are making financial investments for this outdoor dining, begging the question, is it going to be worth it? How long will I be able to do this? I tell them that the governor's executive order does not have an expiration date attached to it, but there potentially could be an expiration. And the Planning and Zoning Commission has went on record to say they want to provide any kind of intervention measures, if that's the right word, so that
these restaurants will not feel that they've put out these resources in vain, but instead the commission will pick up where the governor left off to allow these restaurateurs to continue what they're doing. So my planning zoning commission is meeting, it seems like, weekly, so we'll have lots of opportunity to get that done. But I've not heard anything about the governor shutting down this executive order, which was a question of some restaurants. If we're in phase two, does that end phase one? No was the answer to that question. Phase one continues, and phase two is added to it. For some restaurants who have the space, that puts them almost back where they were to begin with. If they only get 50% occupancy inside and they can put another 50% outside, it almost puts them back where they were, but they're still making up for lost time. So I feel a kinship now to some of these restaurants who we've been working with, and I certainly know I patronize them as often as I can. I'm sure so do everyone on this group. I have nothing else, but I'm available for questions.
So essentially, if you drive around, you'll see that some of these restaurants have done a magnificent job. It looks so inviting. And it's almost as if this is a blueprint for the future of how we can make outdoor dining much more vigorous in town. If you look at Railroad Place, how they've set it up there, Parker along the water, Reeve along the water, same with the Boathouse. They're doing a great job, and I think it's just really a great thing for our community. I think that's how we should be looking moving forward overall. But that's you know, the next step. But right now, I think we're doing well. And again, it's the approval process. It's just what Mark was doing with the salons and stuff. It's a good faith. We trust you to do the right thing. We're going to come in and spot check you, help you out if there are problems, rework it, come back again if there are problems, then it becomes more of an issue. And if they have to come back a third time, well, then it's really a problem. But most of them, they're willing and able to move forward. Those that have already been through the phase one application, it's be a snap for them to do it. It's those guys that didn't do outdoor dining yet that are doing indoor, that may not have the right chemicals, they may not have the right spacing and understand everything. I think that's where Mark and Nate will have to help them out a little bit more. But overall, I think we're in pretty good shape with these guys.
Great. Thank you, Matthew and Mary, and again, for all your work on that sector. They're an important one. They were hardest hit. Restaurant business was hardest hit from an unemployment standpoint in the state of Connecticut. And I think that's, you know, the governor recognized that, and we're recognizing it locally as well to make sure we have ways to, not only for that sector, but I know a lot of time has been spent on that sector to help them.
One more thing on that. The restaurants are finding it difficult to expand back into production because the unemployment money is greater than the money that they were making, the $600. And it's a problem. And yesterday the governor, you know, said that he was looking to see if he could modify that, because if you're making more money by staying home, it becomes a problem. And the restaurants don't want to go to the Department of Labor and say, hey, listen, we're offering these people their employment back. And under the rules, if that's the case, then their unemployment gets pulled. They don't want to go to that extreme. They're trying to bring them back. So there may be an issue, not just in this sector, but in other sectors, of getting people to come back, because it's more lucrative almost to stay home.
Yes, you're right. That has been widely reported on. You are 100% correct, Matthew. Any other questions for Matthew or Mary before we move? I think Jen's back with us. Brian? No. I thought you said unmuted for a minute, Brian. Okay. All right. So let's move and move back to gyms and fitness facilities. Jen, do you want to update us on that?
Hopefully you can hear me. Yay. Okay. The fitness centers opened yesterday. As part of phase two, we did hold a Zoom meeting with members of the business of the fitness sector. It was Monday. We had probably, I'd say, a dozen or so people on that Zoom meeting, along with a couple of guest speakers to go over some best practices and things that they've been seeing with some of their other locations that have opened in other places throughout the country. So I think it was informative. And helpful, and we've had some questions not a huge amount. I'm assuming that means in my thought process from different things that I've seen, the phase two plans, at least for the fitness sector, seem to be fairly self-explanatory, I'll say. There were a couple of amendments. We did put together a list of frequently asked questions. I'm not sure if they were posted yet. We were holding off because we were waiting, because I'd been told by my contact at DECD that there were going to be a couple of updates. They did finally get posted yesterday. I found them last night. So they are out. So we can now post our frequently asked questions for this sector. And there's only like two. One has to do with pools, which won't affect many people. And then one, it was just a little bit of question in regard to the spacing of equipment or of people. It's set to be 6 feet between people or equipment. If they're going to be wearing masks, if they are not going to be wearing masks, it needed to be 12 feet apart. However, the update allows for non-vigorous exercise participants can maintain 6 feet of distance while not wearing a mask. So it's something that has to be looked at from each studio or each center for each activity that is, whether or not that would fall into a non-vigorous category or not. So they're moving along, and I think you know, the feedback was seemed to be pretty good. There weren't too many questions other than possibly what we've gotten online. So those new, that updated document is on the Connecticut website, and then we will get our FAQs posted.
No, that's great, Jen. Do we have any questions for Jen on fitness and gyms and fitness facilities? It's similar. It's a self-certification process. So again, we're not visiting them prior to opening. And there may be some spot checks, but it is a self-certification process. And Jen's right. I joined her Zoom call on Monday, and she did have Becky Cerrone, CEO of Joyride, and Pat Ramirezma, the CEO of our local Westport Western YMCA, share some best practices that they've seen from across the nation as they've been involved in reopening. And I think that was really the best part of that meeting, because they had some insights that I think some of our smaller, more boutique, local fitness facilities and studios just hadn't thought. So I think that was really the value add of that Zoom call. And driving around yesterday, I mean, Jen, you and I don't think we have a feeling of a percentage of how many, how many of our fitness facilities are open. But driving around, I would say a couple opened yesterday. I saw a few, but I think we'll see probably by next Friday, I'm guessing over the next 10 days, we'll see many of them reopening. Do you think that's a fair thing to say?
I would think so. Again, some of them are small, you know, really small or more individual type practices or studios. So I think as they're feeling more comfortable, they'll be opening up. So I would agree.
And I think the big thing that people were waiting for, you know, as we've talked a lot about other sectors and the rules that have been challenging to enact in their businesses, I think the challenging rule for this sector is this 12 feet apart with no mask. So just from a standpoint of setting up equipment and managing flow on that was definitely something we heard feedback on, that was going to be challenging. So this non-vigorous wording, I think, will prove to be helpful for some of our local boutique owners, gym owners, and fitness facility owners.
Correct. If I can just add, I did bring that up with DECD about the concern of the 12 feet. They said they have been hearing that from quite a few people, because again, that really limits how much space they have within their establishment. So they did say that at this point in time, they are not going to roll that back. But I guess they want to see how it goes first. So at this point, that will remain, but I did share that that was a concern from our business sector.
Yeah. Any questions for Jen on this business sector? Okay. So, you know, I just, again, thank you all for indulging me a little bit on some of these detailed discussions, but I think there's a couple things I wanted to make sure came to light this week. Is first of all, and I think all of you have been a great example from a standpoint of liaison roles you've played, as we've been working with the businesses and learn and understand some of their worries and concerns, we've been able to really kind of help them work through those as they operationalize again. And again, not changing the rules, but very much clarifying and very much just helping people and sharing best practices. I think that's been a really powerful part of the liaison role. And I think everybody who has served in that role to date with the business sectors opening, without a doubt, that's been, I think, very, very helpful to our local business owners. So, and, you know, so allowing us to kind of talk through some of these details and have the public and any business owners who are listening understand kind of the deep dives on in the various business sectors, you know, I think that becomes very clear how important that piece has been. The other thing I wanted to kind of draw attention to this before we pivot to some other topics is that I think the governor continues to use the number of about 95%, that now with phase two underway, and to your point, Mary, it didn't mean phase one was over, it meant it was just additive to phase one, that the governor keeps using the number of about 95% of our business sectors can be open. It sounds like we don't have 95% of Westport open yet, because as we talked about, you know, it is up to the business owner as to whether or not they want to open, under what time frame, and under what can make sense for them and their business and their clients and their financial risk. So, but I will say, you know, if I'm kind of getting the picture correctly, we have about half of our non-hair salon, potentially even more, half of our non-hair salon businesses open. We have about half of our hair salon and barbershop businesses certified and open. We have over 75% of our restaurants who have applied for outdoor dining open. And I think, Randy, your number on retail has been solidly 75% or greater of our retail operations are open, many of those being the locals and the independent retailers. Nationals are marching to their own beat a little bit from a standpoint of some of their corporate directives, and that's fine. And Brian, I think you would say that you know our office community is open, but with taking things very very carefully and still emphasizing work from home. So while we may not be 5% threshold, I think that Westport, we can say Westport is definitely feeling open for business again in many, many ways, in a safe and healthy and cautious, yet optimistic and hopeful way. And so I hope that you guys would all agree. And that's sort of why I wanted these conversations to go in depth a little bit over these last couple of weeks. I thought that it was important for us as a team to see this come to fruition, but also, and the work that you're doing in between the meeting come to fruition, like, and the business owners who are listening. Any thoughts or comments on that at all? Okay. Thank you all for your work on that.
Jim Marby, if I could add to that another dimension, and it was a little obscure, but when you thought about hotels and those kinds of things reopening as well, the Department of Health has basically declared that 14-day quarantine, which was never a rule, but sort of a guidance of the people coming from out of state into Connecticut. The thought was you would self-quarantine 14 days. That has been specifically lifted, for lack of a better term, at least for domestic travel. So if you're coming from any of the other 49 states, you're welcome to come into Connecticut and go on about your business immediately. International travel still lives under the quarantine concept. But that's important for our realtors to know. We've been encouraging our realtors to tell people who are renting in Westport to quarantine for 14 days. If you were renting something, particularly now in the summer situation, for 2 weeks, that meant you were going to stay in your whatever you were renting for 2 weeks and not go out. I mean, practically speaking, we know that would not have happened. But so I think we need to make sure our realtors are clear on that as well. Again, I don't know what the science is underneath that, but I do know that the Department of Health is quite clear on that. And on the governor's call that I participate in every Wednesday, I sought clarification on that, just because from the standpoint of Westport and the summer type business it does, I thought that was an important thing to be sure that I wasn't misreading that. So, it was certainly verified by Commissioner Lehman. And so we should get that word out to the realtor community as well.
Thank you. And I know Sarah, who's working and liaising with the realtor community, is already on that from a standpoint of making sure we get that message out to them as quickly as possible, which is great. So does anybody else have any updates that we missed? Just because it doesn't happen to fall into a business sector or what have you. I don't know, John, if you have an update from the school side or Fody, anything from your side? I'm just trying to think. Randy, Brian, anything? Sarah?
I can provide an update. So John Bayers, Board of Education. We continue to work on our plans for the reopening of schools, looking at multiple scenarios. But my understanding is the governor and the commissioner of education are supposed to be putting out a set of guidelines within the next week or so, which will help us with our work. But there are many challenges that we still have to work through. And I think to Brian's point earlier about the tracing and understanding, not just in Westport, but really the broader Fairfield County area, if not even really the state, understanding the trends is going to be very important. 90% of our staff come from outside of Westport. But nonetheless, we, our goal is to try to get everything, back to some sort of normalcy. But we're really going to be limited by what the rules and regulations are. If you look at what the guidance was for summer school, it was extremely prohibitive to do it in person. So depending on how that guidance gets modified going forward, we'll have a lot, in terms of what we're going to do. So I anticipate maybe in the next week or maybe 2 weeks out, I would be able to provide more of an update for this group, because I understand that what we're doing does impact the business community.
I'd just like to say, Jen, the movement back in the offices, I don't have numbers associated with it, but it's very slow going back. There are some things like law offices are finding it very, very convenient to work from home, and there's kind of a new style of work out there. There are some structural things too. The courts are closed. And so there's a kind of a bit of a logjam in the legal system. So there are things like that that kind of affect people's work in offices. But I still, as I said last time, it's things like childcare and education camp and things like that that are determining the work practices in the office. Pretty obvious stuff, Jen. But the offices basically are free to open safely, basically. And they're choosing not to. Look at the commuter parking lot. It's still a matter of choice, I think. And the anecdotal evidence from real estate folks, particularly in the office business, is there's a large demand for small offices right now. And people are saying, well, do I really need to commute every day of the week? And I don't know whether that's good or bad, but it will change our community. It will change our community, I think, for the long term.
John, if I can follow up on that, just real quick, a couple of things on my end. As you can imagine, the garages and service stations and everything like that is 95% or better. They're very busy. The feedback that we're getting is a lot of people are planning day trips and weekend. They know they can't go far away. So there's a lot of car sales. There's a lot of car maintenance. Those things are doing very well. I'll follow up with the train station side. I think I mentioned it last time that the state has assigned somebody to the train station during the rush hour between 6 a.m. or 5:30 a.m. to 12 to speak to commuters that choose to take the rail. The trains, I will say, Deputy Chief Archiola and I stopped in. They're the cleanest we've ever seen them, and they're taking a lot of precautions. And certainly the train stations, too. Just about everything is hands-free, from faucets to paper towels. You can walk in and out of the station without touching anything and get cleaned up. But those things are going well. To what Brian said, and it's very true, and speaking to some of our commuters, New York City is getting busier than they anticipated. It's seeing a lot of traffic. But right now, it's still quicker to drive in than take the train because of the lack of traffic. The traffic is starting to build up. But a lot of people are saying, I'm making it to New York City in less than an hour, depending on what time it is. And same coming out. And there's absolutely no issues finding parking. Parking is either free on the street or extremely reduced at the garages, not the rates that you were seeing. So I think we will see an uptick in our commuters. It is a renewal for permits, and we're not seeing a slowdown. We're right where we want to be or have been in the past years as far as permit renewals. And it still continues for people that are buying homes, even in a rush, that the realtors are checking in of what the wait list and what the process and how long it will be. And we're certainly prepared after Labor Day to make that adjustment if we don't have $5 a day at the level that we did, to actually issue even more permits to possibly not have a list. So there's a lot of options on that end. That's really about it on the business. I'm working closely with Randy. We're hoping to make it as smooth and as nice as possible visually downtown, from barricades to signs to planters to all the right things. And I think that's going to be nice coming out next week. Thank you on my end.
Thanks, Bodie. Randy, because that's the 22nd is next week, right?
Yes. So, yes, I was going to actually thank you, Bodie, for mentioning that. I did want to call that out. This is a public meeting, is that we will have unrestricted parking downtown starting next week, which is awesome. And as Bodie said, it's been a real nice collaboration for that. And our 32 new planters are going to go in on Monday with a number of volunteers. I did actually want to call out, Jen, to something you said earlier that we're hearing now from the retail sector as they're reopening. In addition, just like the restaurant sector having a lot of additional costs, and the good news is there's traffic coming in. What's really the trend that is happening, though, is that they're reducing staff more permanently. Okay, so people that were on furlough are just being let go. We've had seen a few stores close, including like Lucky and a few others that have just chosen not to reopen. So it's still a very challenging time. Stores are finding that they're busy, but they're trying to do that with fewer people. And that is sort of a general trend at the moment. So there's actually going to be still fairly high unemployment in the retail sector as that happens. So hopefully that will, as they see things even out, that will change. Like I said, the good news is that people are seeing business. Somewhat impeded downtown with the construction, but beyond that, which will in the long run be a really good thing, we do have also a number of stores that are still planned to open, which is good news as well, across town. So the stores that had planned openings are still planning them, and we're going to see a number of them this summer. The other thing I actually would call out, just because Brian said, speaking for the design community, of which I'm a part of, we are, from an office standpoint, we're actually, that we've been very successful, and five or six of my peers in the area, people are finding that they are anxious, frankly, some of them, to get back. And so we're going to start a slow stage reopening at the beginning of July, and a number of my peers are going to start doing that as well. It's going to be on a voluntary basis, and not everyone's going to do it. But it is more about the sense of, A, tired of working out of their bedrooms, and B, the need to have some physical presence. So that's happening in our sector.
Right. It seems like we are. Everything is happening in a very gradual manner, and that feels about right for the pace and the tempo that I think was set early on here in Westport. So, feels about right. Okay. Thank you all. Anything else before we sign off and put 11 o'clock in your diary again next week on Thursday? May pivot and have a little bit of a different meeting next week, content wise, but. Like I said, I wanted to take a deep dive on some sectors this morning and have done that for the last couple of weeks. So thank you for indulging me on that. Anything else? All right. Well, you guys have a great week and we'll see you next Thursday at 11. Thank you very much.